Welcome. You're listening to Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area on CICK 93.9 FM. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Laszlo Polgar.
Something our guest Reagan Polgar said in the previous episode gave us an idea. Laszlo and I watched the documentary Will and Harper, a 2024 American documentary film that follows Will Ferrell and Harper Steele as the duo make a 17-day road trip just after Harper transitions. Then, Laszlo and I had a conversation on the impact it had on each of us. I don't think we could have had this depth of sharing if we hadn't already built a solid relationship on genderqueer issues. You'll notice a lot of background noises. We recorded our conversation at my home with the wood stove crackling and a family of foster cats playing in a metal kennel beside us, just like they are right now. In this environment, we could both feel safe to express our thoughts. And apparently, Beverly the foster cat mom and her four kittens also felt safe to express themselves. We encouraged you to watch the documentary in the last episode, so forgive us, but there will be a lot of spoilers in this episode called Harper and Will Take Us on a Journey. It's really hard to watch a documentary alone. And the whole time I was watching both times, I really wished you'd been there with me, Laszlo, because you're the one person who would understand why this affects me so deeply. Because it affects you like a multiple of ratios beyond what it affects me, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely.
The big one for me where I fell apart the hardest, I just really fell apart, was the theme song. They kept going back to, what was her name, Kristen Wiig. Let's call her, see if she's got it done. And she didn't get it done. And I felt really let down by Kristen Wiig. And suddenly this theme song starts at the end and I'm like, this is perfect!
Yeah, for my first watch through, I actually hadn't made it to that point. But the second time I did a watch through, I had let the credits play through because I was doing something else. And the little theme song came on. I was like, oh, she actually finished it. Because I had thought that she just never finished it.
Yeah.
But no, it was very cute and definitely encapsulated the whole like documentary very well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I really loved that Will was not afraid to touch Harper. Like,
yeah.
Their friendship started out as two guys, So obviously it's going to be awkward. You don't touch each other. Two guys, you know, unless you're punching each other on the arm about a football game, you don't touch each other. But Will never seemed to feel that awkwardness because it's his friend, Harper.
Yeah.
And he really felt the need to lean in, and there was hugging, and there was, you know, hanging off the shoulder. And it was so tender.
Yeah, I definitely felt like he very quickly kind of warmed up to it, and the whole like idea of her transition and everything. And I definitely feel like that's like such a quick contrast to even just like the first 5 minutes of the documentary, where he was like questioning like, oh, will I have a new friend? Like, is it gonna be completely different? Because that idea that transitioning really changes you more than like just physically in your appearance and whatnot is so silly to me, because you're really just the same person. You're just kind of wearing that mask that she kind of expresses she was wearing for a very long time. That mask of just being a cisgender person. But no, it's all the same. It's just a different appearance. And he kind of like grasped that concept like super quickly, which was very nice to see someone so rapidly kind of catch on to how it needed to be.
Yeah. And Harper's sister's reaction, too. That one was another one that really touched me. Oh, good. I have a sister. I've always wanted a sister. I thought, wow, that was really quick.
No, my sibling was a lot the same way, kind of, when I came out to her the first time. They were like, oh, that's awesome. Cool. And relationship was not damaged in any way, sense, or form. So it was pretty awesome just having that similar sibling relationship get like seen the documentary.
That must be hard though, in situations where people don't know how to react, and then it does get awkward, and then you don't know how to react.
For sure, it's scary, but like for as scary as it can be for you getting that information and like finding it out, it's so much scarier by like as the person that's coming out, because if it goes wrong, then for the person who's receiving the information, you could lose like a relationship or something. But for the person that's coming out, it's that gamble of losing relationship and losing support and so much different kinds of support with every single person that you're talking to. And it's a huge, huge gamble. And the you don't realize their full entire opinion on something like that.
Right.
Until it happens.
Right.
Until you make that kind of step and come out properly. Because as much as they can have that, a positive opinion on other people, having it be their own family members or their friends or partners, it's a completely different kind of situation and reaction that, like, happens in that process.
Right. Now, whenever something happens to me, I think, now, what would that be like for Laszlo? So, for instance, if something happened to one of my relationships, I would lose a friend. I might even get discredited in a group that we share. But it would never feel unsafe.
Yeah.
But for you, there must be times where you literally feel it's a dangerous position suddenly.
No, I've definitely felt that way. I've felt that way coming up to family even before. Not, like, very close family, as much as just kind of distant family. And then, yeah, like with strangers, you never really know when you're exposing yourself in that kind of way. You never know the true intention or feelings that stranger has towards you now. Because whether you like it or not, you're kind of making a political statement when you come out to somebody.
Mm.
And that's kind of just how other people view it half the time.
Yep.
And part of that can be seen in the documentary itself, like with the scene with the governor.
Right.
Where they didn't even really register that the governor was someone who was so against trans laws. And it's so much more intense in the documentary because of who that person is, but that kind of situation happens very commonly, like, when you're just living your life as a trans person, you kind of meet strangers and average people and are constantly coming out to these people in different, like, small little ways, and you have no idea what their feelings or opinions are on you, especially when it's, like, someone you meet in person and they have no online...
Like, that sort of thing... Our lives are so different.
Yeah.
On any given day, you and I might run into a politician who has strong views on gender issues, for instance. It's not going to affect me at all. Mm. I don't know that they've got these views, and I will never care that they've got these views, except if it gets dangerous for somebody, and then I will care a lot.
Yeah.
But for you, it's an automatic personal thing.
Yeah.
Because they're going to reflect that.
Yeah.
That feeling.
Yeah. Even if they react positively or good in that moment, you never really know if that's kind of a facade of how they really feel. And it can be dangerous sometimes. Sometimes people will lie on purpose to kind of, like, make you feel that false sense of security. And
it, you mean to trap you?
Yeah, like, oh, in awful. However it may be, like, it can happen, it has happened, and there's many, many stories of trans people being hurt or even killed by people who will, on purpose, give them that false sense of security. And it's happened before, and it is very, very, very scary. And it's, like, definitely something that most trans people have to consider when they're meeting people for the first time, especially in scenes where it's, like, the dating scene or making, like, close personal friendships. It can get dangerous pretty quickly, and you don't even realize it.
Yeah. Until it's too late.
Yeah.
Boy, I'm sorry to hear that, Laszlo. I'm really sorry. Yeah, I thought that scene with the governor, I mean, you didn't know, right? They played it well in the documentary. You had no idea until afterwards in the movie what his views were. They talked about that. Yeah. And I was really surprised that Will's reaction was, I wish I had confronted him. I wish I had just said, so what are your views on this?
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that would have been brave. I don't know if right. I could have
it's
done
very,
that.
It's step forward that you don't really think to take in the moment. And then later on, you're like, oh, I should have said something about that. And it's never really, because it's kind of an unnatural thing to really ask somebody, right?
Yeah.
It's not something you really would bring up in conversation. That's just your everyday, like, oh, what did you have for dinner last night? Intense questioning, especially for meeting somebody. So I can definitely see why that's not somebody's first step.
Do you think this is going to become more common in the States, though? Because I'm feeling like the politics is bringing out all the confrontational people who are now becoming braver about being confrontational.
It depends. Like, I'm not really completely sure how people will react to how it is down in the States, and it's definitely not that great right now, but not really sure if it would end up coming out in that reaction.
It feels so uncertain, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's very uncertain. I have no...
It makes me glad, though, that I watched this documentary and that I'm taking stock of it.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, Harper got misgendered a few times in the documentary. Yes. And I was really impressed how they very gently corrected people.
Yeah.
It worked so well.
Yeah, gentle corrections are definitely something that a lot of trans people have gotten kind of into the habit of doing it every once in a while. But it's very tiring to have to gently correct people, especially when it's constant.
And when it's obvious that you've misgendered.
Yeah. And I know when I was younger, I tried my best to kind of pass and be seen as a cis person. And even then, I would consistently get misgendered, and it wasn't really anything I could really do about it, even with how much about my appearance I was changing and putting towards this idea of what a cis person looked like. Their friend that kind of they had met up with, I can't remember her name, but she talks about it with her voice, where you realize, like, oh, are you doing it for yourself, or for everyone else. Mm. So I've kind of given up on gently correcting people because I've kind of realized that even cis people get misgendered and it's not worth the energy half the time because there's always those like small moments where it turns into a big thing and a big fight and it's not worth it.
No,
it's
just
not worth it.
No.
And I'm like, if I'm just trying to get my cup of coffee...
Well, yeah, we don't need to react to this landmine. You just blew my leg off, but never mind.
I got misgendered. It happens. I'll be fine. And there's definitely other people where it'll affect deeply and they can't have that reaction to it and it hurts a lot more, but that's kind of what I've ended up doing in my whole transition and everything. Just kind of accepting that it's going to happen and there's not much I can do about it. Especially, like, I'm a pretty short person, so... If you're short, it's kind of the end of the world for you in trying to look super masculine or anything like that. So I think that was my downfall for a lot of it, and also being pretty young.
Yeah, you kind of have a lot of things going against you that we might take for granted, don't we?
Yeah. I think the documentary was super, super good, but it definitely came from a more perspective that a trans woman would have, and there's a lot of overlap, like a ton of overlap, of course, because it's the same general concept, but it's a little bit different, and I thought it was very funny for things like the sports events and the bars and the very masculine areas that Harper would go into, and she would talk about this kind of discomfort that she had because now she was a woman in those environments. I definitely share that kind of sentiment, not because I'm a woman in those environments as much as I'm perceived as a woman in those environments. And so it's that same anxiety, that same kind of like treatment that I know I could kind of get because I'm not only being perceived as a woman, but a very not feminine looking one half the time when I'm kind of like passing that way, right?
And there are expectations in our society at sporting events for sure.
Yeah.
That you have to look and act a certain way when you get in there. There's a real machismo that everybody is supposed to exude. And there were times where I felt protective of Harper, like, why are you doing this? Don't even go in there, you know? But if this was a place that I'd been going to all my life and I'd always felt comfortable going there, then why can't I go there? Like, that's not reasonable.
Yeah.
To expect Harper to never go back just because what they're likely to encounter.
Yeah, no, I definitely, like, that kind of touches on that. Like, it's sad that it kind of ends up being that way, but unfortunately it is kind of just unsafe once you transition to do a lot of the things that you felt you could do before that. And that can go for both trans men and women, but especially for trans women, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, the amount of things that you're going to be facing because you're being perceived as a woman half the time, and then also as a trans woman the other half.
On top of it, yeah.
It's a pretty big punch that you're going to be dealt with. Definitely not for the faint of heart.
I think our society really needs to reconsider a lot of its assumptions, a lot of its expectations. I don't think our expectations on each other and on ourselves are reasonable anymore. And we need to do some navel gazing.
Yeah.
I really liked that conversation in the bar with Dana.
Yes.
I thought that was really therapeutic because Dana could put perspective on it, and you could see in Dana's face reflection of some of the things that Harper was feeling and hadn't articulated yet. It was a great experience. I was, you know, at first I thought, whoa, where are we going here? But the more into it they got, the more into the, and the more genuine it became, the more I thought, wow, here's the meat of the documentary for me.
Yeah, I definitely feel like all of the kind of conversations that they had with the different people that they met up with, it was such different reactions and conversations across the board that it was overwhelmingly like positive on most fronts. There were definitely a few moments where you're like, oh, this is a little bit awkward.
Yeah, but not as many as I expected to see.
No, definitely a lot more like positive and
like Oklahoma nicely. Was so positive.
Oklahoma's definitely very nice.
Oh, it was so lovely.
Yeah, especially with that starter being like, oh, scary.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very scary environment that she ended up like walking into in that bar, but
In fact, the indigenous people sang to her.
Yeah, no, there was definitely like that positive reaction from everybody involved. And I definitely think it was a good idea for her to take that step back and just kind of judge the situation she was in before kind of going up and talking to people. Because, you know, like, if somebody does have a problem with you, like a real problem with you, they'll probably make it known before you even walk up to them.
Yeah.
And if you're leaving people alone for the most part, they're not going to bother you. But yeah, no, like the different conversations with people that they met on the road were so interesting. Like, especially the one with the therapist they had met.
Yes, near the end at the Grand Canyon. Yeah, yes.
Was very intense and such like a weird, like eye-opening moment for the both of them in a way.
Yeah.
That different perspective that they got of that very similar experience.
Yeah.
And it does kind of encapsulate that idea of you can change someone's life so much by doing so little. And it can just be like the few words that you say to them when they're trying to open up to you can really end up changing how they perceive themselves and how they're living their life in a moment. And it's very important, especially as like professionals, that you consider what people are saying before you kind of like shut down the conversation, especially around like gender stuff, because it's pushing that down and ignoring it isn't a solution at all. That I feel like is just a precursor to a death sentence.
Well, the line that Harper said that I think affected me the most deeply was, I'm not afraid of these people, I'm afraid of hating myself.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that people would ever feel that way. I never expected to hear that of anybody.
Yeah. I've had moments like that. And I think, like, for me, I am not as afraid of hating myself as much as I am afraid of other people. And I think that's kind of where our experiences kind of diverge a bit. Because at the end of the day, she has lived her life as a very masculine person and has that experience of being that person, and she could probably throw a fist and probably win if she really needed to, but I could not. Mm-hmm. I definitely, if something ended up happening, I would be in a lot of danger, and so I definitely am not as unafraid of other people as she might be afraid of, because I feel like a lot of her pain and fear comes from herself and self-judgment and whatnot. Right. But yeah, I've definitely had a lot of experiences and a lot of moments where it wasn't really self-judgment and self-loathing that brought me into that spot as much as it was another person. So I can see it and agree with it from her perspective, but I don't think that that's every trans person's experience.
Well, you've had a good start, right? Yeah. You've got people supporting you.
I've got a lot of emotional and stable, like, support for foundation, but I definitely don't have a lot of self-sustain, I guess I could say. And so that's kind of where she's got that. She had to do a lot of her building her foundation herself and not having that kind of, like, support behind it. And so it does kind of end up in a lot more of, like, self-loathing fear kind of deal.
But both of those would be, in my opinion, equally awful.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I don't think that anybody should have to live in fear of themselves or hatred of themselves or fear of somebody else or hatred of anyone else. I don't see how that's healthy, regardless of who it's directed at.
Yeah.
And I'm disappointed in us as a society that we enable that.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I'd say at this point, I don't really expect much else, I guess, because I'm so used to that kind of reaction. It's disappointing. It's really upsetting in a lot of interactions.
I mean, if there's a listener-supported radio station, it means that people can get
daily, every day, a different way of looking at the world, not just what the corporate media want you to see, but a different picture, different understanding, but a different picture, a different understanding. Not only can you hear it, but you can participate in it. You can add your own thoughts, you know, and you can learn something and so on. Well, that's the way, people become human, you know. That's the way you become human participants in a social and political system.
Hey, my name is Wendy Wright. I'm the director of the Smithers Public Library, and I want everyone in this community and beyond to know that libraries are for everyone.
You are listening to Suddenly I See, a gender toolkit for the Smithers, BC area on CICK 93.9 FM. I'm Christine Bruce.
And I'm Laszlo Polgar.
In the first half of this episode, Harper and Will take us on a journey. We were discussing how the recent documentary, Will and Harper, affected our notions of the realities of being trans in the modern world. I learned a lot from this film, and I was glad to bounce my ideas off Laszlo, who always clarifies things for me from their personal perspective. Laszlo is very brave, both in how they live as a trans person in our society, and as a friend willing to help me understand better. Now, more of our conversation on the film Will and Harper, a documentary that follows Will Ferrell and Harper Steele as the duo make a 17-day road trip across America, just after Harper transitions.
Ah, you know, the saddest scene was when they walked into that house that Harper had purchased for herself to be safe and to be able to express herself as... and to see that it was vandalized and to hear the disappointment in her voice and how she had to give that dream up.
Yeah.
I just found that very
depressing. her whole story around that house and her fantasy of just getting to like be away and live as a woman, I definitely saw a lot of myself in that when I was listening to her say it. And I know a lot of other people have kind of had that like general fantasy of just kind of running away from everybody that you know and have lived that kind of life with, to just be this whole new person without any of those ties to your past self, basically, and just get to be exactly how you want to express yourself.
But there isn't a place like that on Earth, right?
At the end of the day, like, eventually you do end up being found out. Someone will eventually kind of figure out at least that you're trans, and for a lot of people that kind of ruins the fantasy for them. Yeah, there's not many ways to just run away and ignore, even while transitioning, just kind of ignore that part of yourself.
So if you can't run away, this is an interesting question that I hope you don't find offensive. If you can't run away, then your only options are to live where you are in stealth or to expose yourself, right?
Yeah.
There aren't any other options.
That's pretty much it. Even if you do run away, it's basically just those two options again.
Right. Right.
It's, just live in stealth or kind of expose yourself and try your best to live how you please. But, yeah, it's still just very exposing. And then you kind of just end up, by exposing yourself, getting rid of that opportunity to be invisible, really, at any point in time. There's always going to feel like there's a spotlight on you.
Yep.
Wherever you kind of go.
Right. One comment that I would like to make is, I personally don't really like Will Ferrell's form of comedy. So when your mom recommended watching this, I thought, okay. And Yes, Will Ferrell does occasionally go off into goofy things. And the first time I watched the documentary, I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to grit my teeth and let Will Ferrell get through this, whatever it is that he feels he has to get out of his system. But the second time I watched it, I realized that what Will Ferrell is doing is taking the spotlight off of Harper. Look at me! Look, I'm being silly over here! And I thought, this is really brave of him to go off and do something ridiculous so that Harper can have a few minutes of breathing space.
I can kind of appreciate his attempts. Kind of doesn't work sometimes. Mm-hmm. I can appreciate his attempts at kind of making her feel like she's not the center of attention as much as he is.
Yeah.
And where she can feel more like everyone is looking at him instead of her. Because I definitely do, that feeling of like, oh, I'm just in public, so I feel like everybody's looking at me. Yeah, I've definitely had that feeling and like panicky, like, oh my god, moment before.
Yeah.
And yeah, like that whole like fishbowl feeling, it's definitely, there was that whole scene in the steakhouse where they did
that
the challenge.
That was frightening.
And it was an intense kind of fishbowl moment. And while I haven't had anything quite to that level of fishbowl moment, I've definitely had moments like that where just me existing and being in an environment or having some kind of presence garnered me enough attention where it did really just feel like that I'm on display, my transness is on display. And it's a pretty interesting and lonely feeling, especially as a kid when you're having it, because most of my experience, like, yeah, keep in mind, most of my experiences with these kinds of things have been had while I'm a child, basically, while I'm in, like, as a teenager. And so, yeah, that kind of fishbowl moment where I'm, like, very exposed and anything could go wrong and anything could kind of happen if I don't present myself exactly to a specific standard has definitely happened to me before, because, you know, I just happen to be trans.
Without saying what exactly happened or where it was, I know you were telling me the other day about a situation that happened at work where you couldn't actually leave. You were in the spotlight, in the fishbowl, and it's becoming uncomfortable, and then it's almost becoming dangerous. And you can't leave. You're stuck there.
No, I'm just there.
The trouble is, nobody else came to stand beside you. So this person could continue to attack you.
Yeah.
And I felt like that whole situation in the steakhouse, like, it could have escalated so easily.
Yeah, definitely.
And then nobody did anything, but then the escalation happened on social media. There were a lot of tweets out, and they were really hardcore, cruel tweets. And I thought, man, like, how do we de-escalate these situations? How do we make it so that it fizzles out?
Yeah, I'm honestly, I don't even really have a great answer for that.
Well, I feel for you, because you have to find an answer. I don't have to find an answer, right? But you do.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, you know, in our next conversation, we need to talk about how a person can be a good ally, not just a supporter.
For sure.
But an ally who literally isn't passive about this.
Like, a big part of allyship is kind of making that effort and noticing when things are going down and when things are happening.
So the difference, for instance, if I'm watching this situation of you at work and I say to you afterwards, well, that's just them, they're like that. That's a supporter saying, yeah, you were right.
Yeah.
But an ally would step in and say, hey, I could really use some help with X, Y, and Z. And then you just defuse the whole thing. It's not going to happen because they've been stepped over.
Yeah. Like, anything, any little kind of effort kind of helps. And I can definitely understand where, in some situations, you just don't notice it, or it's not in your capacity to make that step forward. Like, maybe you, like, just straight up can't. Like, there's not that kind of opening for you. And I can understand it, but there's definitely moments where that kind of situation goes down in front of a crowd and then nobody steps up. And that's a completely different kind of situation.
Yeah, and we really need to be better about that kind of thing. I can't look myself in the mirror at night if I don't.
Definitely.
If I don't step in. I have to tell you that I have a lot more respect for Will Ferrell now, seeing him in this situation. I found him very sensitive and considerate of his friend Harper. And I like that At the beginning, he doesn't really look like an ally. He just looks like somebody who wants to learn. Okay, what should I do in this situation? I have all these questions. But as they're going across the country, he develops into a really great ally because they have conversations together and they talk about what happened. And then, you know, you can see that Will is making decisions about, well, if that ever happens again, maybe this is what I'll try.
Yeah.
And by the end, he's a really strong ally.
For sure, for definitely.
Harper. It's really cool.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that comes from his effort, not just with, like, himself, but he'll ask only necessary questions to Harper, really. And then the majority of them, it seemed like he went about it through analyzing what should be done and shouldn't be done in the moment.
Right.
And kind of making those executive decisions and being very, like, analytical about it and whatnot. Because, like, sometimes it's just too exhausting to be answering all of your questions and telling you how to behave around us when we're just trying to figure out how to behave ourselves.
Yeah. Well, if I'm putting all the heavy lifting on you, that's not a fair relationship. Yeah.
Do all the work for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Laszlo, you made a comment to me the other day about sometimes wondering whether it might be easier to just be cis.
Yeah.
And I heard Harper say that I basically left it all this time because it was. It just seemed like an easier thing to be.
Yeah.
But now that I've transitioned, it's not easier either way. Neither one is easy.
No, it's hard both ways. And it's hard for different reasons. Like, it's hard when you transition because it's hard to kind of know that you might lose people. There's more danger in the world for you. There's attacks that you're going to be open towards. There's a lot of reasons where it's hard to just transition and live your life as a trans person. But I feel like covering that up and trying to pretend it's not there is infinitely harder just because you get basically all the same stuff that a trans person would be dealing with, but internalized, and you don't really have anybody to really talk about it.
So no support. Right. No support. Right.
It's just you and your internal debate with yourself, and it is not great. Yeah, it's not healthy at all.
Thank you, because I think for those of us who have never had to consider this, it's easy to say, well, one or the other looks good to me, right?
Yeah.
But it's not our lives. We're not living this. So we don't have no personal stake in it. So we really shouldn't be giving in our opinion at all.
Yeah, for sure.
But I think a lot of people do give their opinion, and maybe they should just learn to zip it.
A lot of people give their opinion, especially when you're a young trans person. I noticed a lot when I was transitioning and doing the first steps of everything, a lot of people would basically say that I'm too young to be making those kinds of decisions.
Right, right.
For myself.
We do this. You're too young to vote, and you're too young to transition. And what would you know about these situations?
You don't understand these kinds of things properly. You don't understand how it works. You don't understand these things. You're confused. And then I'll have an actual conversation with these people about it. And then I realize, oh my God, you're projecting onto me because they don't know anything about anything. And they're just figuring out how trans people work based off of propaganda that they see on social media. And I'm doing the actual research and the actual communication with other queer people and figuring out these things with myself and understanding these identities and doing the actual work.
But you're also feeling it, right? You're living the experience.
Yeah, and feeling it and experiencing it. And so, like, when these people are like, oh, you don't understand what you're talking about, I'm like, well, apparently I understand more than you because you don't even know the first steps. It's just, so you want to be a man, so you want to be a woman now. I'm like, well, it's not even how it works, really.
Right, right.
It's not a want. If I had a choice about it, then I probably wouldn't be trans. I'd just be living my life with, like, any other person.
Yeah, why would anybody choose to do something like that, right?
I have no idea.
It doesn't make any sense.
It's definitely not a choice. I make fun of that idea that it's a choice a lot, because think to yourself and ask yourself, why would anybody in their right mind choose to be hated on constantly?
Right.
And lose these relationships and these friendships and these opportunities and these things that you could achieve in your life if you weren't trans. Why would you ever choose that?
And putting your body through all those changes.
It's so much money, it's so much energy, it's so much work. Why would that ever be a choice?
It's like a few years ago, people saying, why would anybody lie about being raped or assaulted?
Mm-hmm.
And having been assaulted myself a couple of times, I know what I'm talking about. And it's not an easy thing to come forward and say, this has happened.
Yeah. I don't know what anyone would be gaining from pretending to be trans. I know that there's like some instances where somebody is confused and they do end up regretting their choices, but it's very few and far between. And the majority of people who do regret their choices are completely fine now, and they're just living their life as a cis person. It's not even that big of a deal. So
I think gender is a very complex bodily function that we don't understand at all, and we need to stop enforcing rules around it, because I think there are a lot fewer rules naturally than we realize.
Yeah. Yeah, like we kind of like touched on it earlier, like gender is just really just a label that people apply to how they're feeling, and some of it is a bit affected by how you look like.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's gender, baby. There was a couple scenes, I guess. The public swimming scene.
Oh, yeah.
It was fun to me. And it seems like such a small thing from, like, a viewer that isn't trans. But swimming in public is a huge, huge obstacle for every single trans person I've ever met.
Well, I find it an obstacle. I don't like people looking at my body, and I'm exposing my body, and I'm not trans.
Yeah.
Right? I think there's a lot of us. I know my father-in-law never went swimming because he didn't want people to see his legs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there are lots of situations where you can hang a hat on and say, okay, I sort of get it because, you know, I'm not trans and I don't really like this.
Yeah, you can extend that kind of, ability to kind of put yourself a little bit into those kinds of shoes. But then it's like, when you're trans, it's not even just about how you look as much as when you're in a swimsuit, when your body is that exposed, there's no amount of clothing or styling that you can do for people to look past how your body is.
Right. The ultimate of exposure then.
Yeah. And especially like for me as a trans person who has to bind sometimes. When I was younger, super, super dangerous, don't ever do it, but I went swimming in binders because I couldn't handle the idea that somebody would just assume something like that about me just because I have a chest. And that's not something I could hide if I'm ever going swimming. You're getting wet. Even if you're wearing a shirt, it's going to be sticking to your chest. You're going to be exposed. You're going to have that exposure. And so went swimming in a binder, super, super unsafe. And now I have a lot of issues with my ribs and spine because of it.
Oh.
And a lot of trans people, especially people who bind, have similar experiences like that where they just don't feel comfortable enough to not be binding and not be taking those proper safety precautions when they're going swimming or working out or any kind of physical activity for that matter. Even just like going to sleep. I know a lot of trans men who will go to sleep in their binding equipment, and it's super, super dangerous for your body, and they can't even brace themselves to take it off because it's just having that kind of exposure. And so swimming, it's so exposing. And so seeing Harper be so much more comfortable in her body just because of that trip and be able to go swimming and be able to lounge in the hot tub afterwards and just be comfortable with it and start talking about how the only bother that she really has in the moment is how her swimsuit fits her. Just knowing that she's much more comfortable with herself just because of that trip is so heartwarming. Yeah, just knowing that that's that thought process that most, if not every trans person has to go through when they put on that swimsuit. Just the fact that that's the only worry she has is it doesn't fit her very well.
So there's a really good argument for top and potentially bottom surgery,
mm-hmm.
is that you want the freedom to be able to go places like a swimming pool.
I know for a lot of trans men, one of the main reasons they go and get top surgery is because they want to be able to be shirtless in public.
Right.
And I'm like, yeah, no, honestly, that sounds so awesome. And that's definitely one of the reasons that I'm interested in top surgery. Not sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like...
Yeah, big step, but there's a good reason for doing it.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that for me, Leslie. Because, I don't never think of these things.
Yeah.
It would never affect me at all. But when I hear about this, suddenly it's a big thing for somebody. And it should be a big thing for me, too.
Even just like that offer to go to the pool or to the beach to your trans friend is such a different kind of, like, exposing offer to them than you might know. It's, yeah, swimming is a big one. That's a big obstacle for a lot of people.
I was listening to an interview the other day, and the advice was, if you've got a trans friend and you want to be a good ally, keep inviting them to things, because there are a lot of events that they won't go to alone, or a lot of events that they won't go to with another trans person because they'll feel exposed. But if you keep inviting them to things, at least they're with you.
Yeah.
And they get out.
Yeah.
And this is a lovely opportunity.
For sure.
But you got to be careful what you invite them to. So, as you just said, you know, if you're going to invite them to go swimming, maybe that's not the best place to invite them.
Yeah. Maybe figure out if they like swimming first. Because if they don't really even like swimming, it's just not a good idea. Yeah. I've kind of gotten over a lot of my issues with swimming just because I love it so much, but then, yeah, there's a lot of trans people where it's not even that big of a deal for... I really like swimming, so I really wanted to get past that hurdle, but sometimes it's just not worth it.
Well, it's where you go, too, right? Don't go to a public space.
Yeah. No. Like, maybe go to, like, a private lake or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That last scene where Will expressed to Harper that she's allowed to kind of feel pretty and got her those diamond earrings.
Isn't that lovely?
Oh, that's so sweet. Because I know a lot of trans women specifically don't ever feel like they can be pretty. And I feel like women in general have such just diverse facial features and ways to express themselves that even if you have like a very masculine like face and voice, like, you can pull it off so well. There's so many good ways to, like, pull it off and be, like, a diva about it.
Right, right. So, I was never raised with the Hollywood ideal of beautiful, right?
Yeah.
I think that that's a real phony ideal.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of beautiful women in Hollywood who I do not consider very pretty.
Yes.
Because they're not very nice people or whatever.
Yeah.
But if you watch, for instance, foreign films, especially the British model, I mean, Judi Dench has got buck teeth. But she's one of the most feminine women. Mm-hmm. Dame Maggie Smith had a funny eye. Like, that's not beautiful. And yet, those women are models of femininity, of women power.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's the person. It's not the ideal. And we've got to get away from these silly ideals that we've set up.
No, it's definitely just that kind of performative beauty thing that, like, a lot of trans women, I'm like, that is just what being a woman is not feeling pretty enough.
Exactly.
And not, like, feeling like you can deserve to be pretty. Like, that is a very feminine experience. It's a bit dysphoric as well, but it's also like maybe it should be a little bit euphoric at the same time. It's a very common experience that a lot of girls I know have. So
yeah. When Harper made some comments about I'll never be pretty, I thought, welcome to the feminine world.
Yeah, welcome.
You've made it. Oh, thank you for this, Laszlo. I don't know that I would have gotten anything out of that film if I hadn't met you, if I hadn't had time to talk to you about it and share some of my thoughts. This has been so great.
Yeah, it's a documentary.
Totally watch it.
Watch the movie. But also, if you don't know any trans people yourself, then go and look at breakdowns of it and articles that other trans people have recorded or written about it, because you can get so much more out of those kinds of stories if you're seeing how it's perceived from the perspective of those communities.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Like, even if you don't know anybody, you still... the internet is your big, big chunk of information, and you can find so many things on it.
Yeah.
Especially people talking about the documentary that you just watched.
That'd be great. And that's it for this episode of Suddenly I See on CICK 93.9 FM in the Smithers, BC area. Did you get a chance to watch the documentary Will and Harper? We'd love to hear how it affected you. You can call the CICK station at 250-847-8769 and leave a message. In the next episode, Laszlo and I will have a final conversation on how to go from a supporter to an ally, just like Will Ferrell manages to do so elegantly. See you then, Wizzy.